Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello, I think. It is Tuesday, September 9th, 2020, in the year of the tweet. Tweedly-deedly-dee, and the global pandemic. With us this morning and all alone, I think he's in the Teen Boss studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon while the rest of us lounge comfortably at home in our PJs. Zooming into the show is our master of the virtual mix and Zoom modulating sound engineer, Truman O'Brien. Truman, how's it going over there?
Not well, actually. I'm scrambling like crazy over here trying to get stuff set up. Well, what happened was Molly and I were kind of running behind the eight ball all morning this morning. And for some reason, when I got ready to set up this show, I was behind the eight ball. I just didn't have it all set up. And so here I am, just, you know, anyway.
You're here. You did leave the morning scramble. And now it is the briefly scramble.
Well, I was scrambling for the briefly. There you go. That was it.
Thanks for transitioning.
Yeah, I'm queen of the segue. Out of the land of magnolias and stuck in her home on the island of Madrones comes the analytic, academic, social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes, Lynn Carrigan. Lynn, what's on your mind today?
Oh my gosh, what a week. It just keeps getting worse and worse, in my opinion. But rather than get into any of that at this moment, I'm going to read you two brief, tiny brief quotes from David McCullough's American Spirit, which I'm trying to read now, going through the history of our country and the history of our challenges and our digging ourselves out from our graves. And he starts out, I want you to know, by saying, persistence and spirit have done wonders in all ages. That's a quote from George Washington. And I will add Franklin Roosevelt's at the beginning of the Great Depression. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. So hang on, buckle your seat belts. You're in for another weekly ride.
May we take that personally? Yes. Onward with introductions. Highly visible on our Zoom screen this morning is the phantom editor of Indivisible, Vachon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration. He is Kevin Jones. Kevin, what is the next big thing on Indivisible Vachon's calendar besides your
We took a little break this last week, but that doesn't diminish our activism. So the next big thing is on September 16th is our monthly meeting, which runs from 7 o'clock to 8:30. And you can go to indivisiblevachon.org on your computer and find the meeting in our calendar, and I hope you can join us. We'll be talking about how we can very effectively get that blue wave in 2018 to reappear in 2020. And we will also be basically going around the room and asking folks how they're doing in terms of helping us achieve that goal. So join in, let us know what you're up to, and find out how you can get involved with other folks doing the same work.
Thank you, and let's hope for a blue tsunami. To us from somewhere in old Vachon is our resident historian and guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman, who tries to bring us the long-range view of all the chaos we're living through and regularly reminds us that while the grinding wheels of justice are short, may take time, they eventually get the bastards in the end. Bruce, is there still hope that will work?
There's always hope. And you got to remember the quote, you know, no justice, no peace. You know, when justice does not work, people turn to other means of accomplishing justice. And you're seeing that to a certain extent right now with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the search for racial justice. And if you don't think it works, I mean, think of where we were a year ago at the start of the NFL season with, you know, players kneeling and people going bonkos over that. And now all the players are kneeling. So things can change.
And we call it progress. Yeah.
Yeah, it leaves me very, very hopeful. I mean, not that there's not a lot to do. There's a lot to do. And we've got a long, long way to go. But we're making strides in recent times, particularly this year, and particularly within the midst of this COVID epidemic, pandemic, that I think is going to have long-term implications and long-term effects on us as a society, positive effects in terms of racial, social, and environmental justice.
Thank you. I love hearing that. And not to be ignored from his home perch is erstwhile presidential candidate, literary carpenter and singing gardener Michael Shook, sometimes known as Chauncey or Chet. What struck you this week in conversation with the sharp-witted Cynthia, or while you're digging in the dirt, Michael?
Well, a couple of things. Thank you, Susan, and howdy, folks. What struck me, not literally, metaphorical sense, the Buddhists often talk about the student says something that's just not headed, and the master, rather than try to explain something, you know, bangs him in the head with a rice pot or something. And so Cynthia and I had a conversation here fairly recently, and there was a proverbial metaphorical banging in my head of my head with a rice pot, which actually was really good after the initial shock wore off. So that's good. It's a very cheery thing there. And then the other thing, I was out in the garden and taking care of stuff, and I thought, this is what we're trying to find ways to do. We're trying to find ways to take better care of each other. And this has kind of been a theme of mine, but that's what we need to be doing. And I think that's what Bruce was addressing there just moments ago. And that search for justice, for fairness under the law, and not just under the law, but in the spirit of the law. I think that's really important. And I think that's one of the things to me that's rallied. I look at people and I think a lot of people are saying, you know, we've got to get back to this, not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. And we've seen that so egregiously flouted over the last 4 years that I think, yeah, people are rising up, and I hope to see a tsunami as well, Susan.
Yeah, and it seems that social justice is motivated by a need to care for one another. I am Susan McCabe. I'm responsible for herding this group this morning. And
herding.
Herding, not hurting, herding. And I'm supposed to be providing insightful feminist critiques of the actions of Big Chief Little Hands as we go on. I am also host of VOV's Real Talk, which follows the Briefly by 15 minutes. Today, I'm offering another favorite encore episode with new author Tavi Black, whose story about being a lonely female among the rock concert roadies was recently published, and it's very entertaining. And I think a little entertainment is probably a good idea right now. So let's get rolling on our topics, the myriad list for today. And Kevin, you had your hand up. What was it you wanted to bring up?
I just want to do a quick follow-up on sort of the theme that Michael established. If our viewer could see through the magic of Zoom, they would see that I'm holding up a copy of Rachel Maddow's book, Blowout. And it's about the oil and gas industry, which sounds like a, you know, like a local thing, but it's about the geopolitics of the oil and gas industry, which is really a fascinating thing. But what in the United States, Oklahoma is the center of oil and gas production. And one of the biggest things they do And what had happened is the oil and gas industry had, over time, really reduced the amount of taxes that had been collected from that industry to the point where the schools were literally, going down to like four days a week. They didn't have appropriate shelters, when tornadoes came through, which happens in that state quite often. And the teachers united. And speaking of people pushing back when the system doesn't do what it should, and they together rose up and had a significant impact. And now the taxation has been rebalanced as schools have sufficient income. And it actually, I think, turned on a wave of other teachers rising up about the inequities in some of the school systems. So I just wanted to champion that those things do happen. They happen. This just happened within the last couple of years. So I agree with the hope and inspiration that Bruce and Michael have provided this morning already.
Thank you.
Susan, could I add just real quickly here on tacking on to Kevin's thing? The New York Times briefing this morning, I was stunned to read that there are actually some conservatives, Marco Rubio is one of them, who are saying, Jeff Sessions was another, if you could call these people conservatives, who are saying labor actually has a place in our society and unions have a place in our society. And they are in a minority still, but the fact that some of these people like that are coming forward and saying there's a place for that, and we need that to counterbalance this unequal distribution of power. So I thought, wow, has the planet gone mad, or but in a good way? So
let me suggest they're hedging their bets if Trump loses.
Sure.
There you go.
You're not supposed to be the cynic.
That's not cynic. Well, that's realist.
He's being realist. I agree.
That's how politics works, isn't it? I mean,
that's right. Yeah.
And isn't Rubio now chairing the Senate
Intelligence Committee? Yes.
Intelligence?
Yeah. The report that they just released, Rubio took it over because the other guy was going to sound like he's going to be indicted for
insider trading.
Insider trading, yeah. So, but anyway, no, he took it over, and they just released their report on the whole Russia thing. Very interesting. And I sent that to you guys, right?
Yes. Yeah. Many pages long. Can you let our readers know how to access that document through the government or whatever you found? And I know you're not going to come up with that link like instantly.
Well,
so,
I will get it here before,
you have it?
I think, before we're done. But,
Heather Cox Richardson and Bruce Holman and Truman O'Brien all gathered or created some summaries of that report. Would you, Bruce, or Truman, like to comment on that? What does that report tell us? What's new? Where is it going?
Bruce, you want to take that, Bruce?
Well, it's it's pretty damning. You know, when you read the report, I mean, it really cuts through. It's interesting that it comes out of a Republican-led committee, but it's a pretty damning report. And particularly when you go to Section 4, which I looked through this morning, just the sort of the collaboration, coordination between the Trump administration and the Trump campaign and the Russians under Putin. Under Joe McCarthy, they would have been labeled communist. I mean, it's outrageous. And, the treason laws in the United States are problematic because treason is defined as aiding and abetting an enemy. Well, we're not at war with anybody technically because Congress has not declared war. So we, in effect, don't have any real enemies. They're all imagined enemies. If you will, but if we did have an enemy, I think Russia certainly is defined as one at this point, trying to undermine our democratic processes. And what you see is blatant cooperation between President Trump, his administration, and his handlers, and it's treasonous.
What I was, if I can say, what I was so impressed with about that report, it's very, very long. But what it does is basically goes all the way through all the people and all of the incidents that Robert Mueller's report went into, and maybe a little bit more even, because the Mueller report was really constrained in the very beginning by his mandate to not investigate the president in any way. So he, in some ways, danced around it, but made some pretty serious I'm hedging here, because he didn't really make conclusions. He set out evidence, and then the Senate Intelligence Committee set out, I think, to see what they thought of the evidence that was out there. And it's really in line with the Mueller report, and I think it is really damning, and it made me feel good, though, that they let that be released rather than cover it up or spin it in the way that William Barr spun the Mueller report.
There were several.
Because now people can see it themselves.
There were sections that were redacted, of course, but the names and dates primarily. But the thing is, Mueller was constrained from doing any counterintelligence. I mean, looking at counterintelligence.
That's it.
These guys were not. And the Senate was not. And they came up with some just amazing stuff, I think. Section 5, the last one that they came out with, Manafort was all over that. I mean, just amazing.
Yeah.
Kevin?
It is amazing. And Manafort's direct contact with a Russian intelligence agent.
Yeah.
Kevin?
I haven't read the report that we're discussing, but in the book Blowout, you know, they talk a lot about the relationship between the United States and Russia, where particularly Russia had discovered some huge reserves of oil and gas in the Arctic, but did not have the technology in order to extract it. Whereas big US oil companies clearly do and did at the time. So at the time, right, they were, when Trump was building up his cabinet and he was talking to Mitt Romney about being Secretary of State, and all of a sudden Romney goes away and in comes Rex Tillerson, who just happened to have been bestowed the Medal of Honor, right, by Putin for being able to extract, to work together with Gazprom to be able to get at these oil reserves. Shortly after the Trump administration was up and running, they got rid of something called Section 1504 out of the Dodd-Frank Act, which was a transparency measure to require utilities to report their money they gave away to these other governments, which basically constituted a lot of essentially graft and bribery, right? And so this whole weaving together of this administration's relationships with Russia, the exploitation that they're trying to do, the promotion of the oil and gas industry is just phenomenal. And hopefully more and more of that will come out in the next, 56 days.
And who's going to bring that out? Who's going to publish it? Who's going to publish this this Senate report? And who's going to believe it?
Two very good questions.
Yeah.
To me, let me ask another question about your first question. The who's going to publish it? Are they not obligated to make that public record through the Library of Congress or something like that?
It probably is.
It is published. I think what Susan's getting at is who's going to turn it into the Pentagon Papers. It's got to be, the New York Times, the Atlantic Monthly, Washington Post. It's got to be a legitimate, sort of press agent who goes out and dives into it and summarizes it for people, much as the Pentagon Papers were summarized by the New York Times, published in full. And now that report is available in full, but most people aren't going to read it. They're gonna want summaries of it, and that's what that's why we have an independent press, as much as it's under threat. I mean, that's the reason to have an independent press.
Kevin,
when the Mueller report came out, I recall that there were like book clubs who and people doing video, I think audio recording of having read through the Mueller report. So when you're sitting in your car in traffic, right, you can listen to it, don't have to read it. Hopefully we'll get more and more things like that happening, because I think this issue is still really important to our country.
And Susan, to your second question, you ask, and who's going to believe it? I think that, you know, people, the polls, everything's saying that people aren't changing their minds too much. And yet here we have Rubio directing the Senate Intelligence Report, bringing out a very clear message from it. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is I know that the Republicans don't want to hear a lot of what's being said there, because then they may have to act on it. But I think there are breakaway parties within that group who are understanding that some of Trumpism is not good for them. Mm-hmm. And I hope that some people will be swayed by that if they're on the fence, or even just looking at the establishment of this country and how we can all keep it safe. That doesn't really seem to me very political, it seems, but of course it is.
Well, yeah, Russian interference in elections is about as political as you can get.
Let me just say that what I meant was, you'd think anybody could see the implications and the import of this report, but it tells you how much your own beliefs can block and sway what you mm-hmm. think about facts.
So true. Michael.
Yeah, obviously Trump's base, I don't think is, you could print just about anything and they're going to see it through the prism of, oh gosh, here's another example of Trump, probably outwitting Putin, the Russian fox, and doing great things for our country in some way, shape, or form. I mean, they'll rationalize anything, I think. I think Marco Rubio, as you pointed out, Bruce, it's politics. And I think it's pretty obvious that he's looking at 2024 presidential campaign. And it's now that the Trumpism, he sees that waning, it's like, okay, time to start separating myself from that so I can establish some statesman credulity. And then I think what you said, Lynn, is really true. I think there are still many Americans who might not be way far left or way far right or something, but who are going to look at this. And if some summaries can come out and this is discussed, I think it will have a salutary effect on how they view the election, and that, okay, some lines have been crossed and we need to shift. We need to change.
And more importantly to me, there is pushback against William Barr, the Attorney General's dismissal of the Mueller report and the mischaracterization of the Mueller report. I think that it's also going to show the great extent to which the whole administration has been covering all of this up. And I hope that people, I guess what I was trying to say is that I want us to stay together as a country with some kind of common values and some kind of common understanding about how we can live together. And it seems to me that there's some basic fundamental truth about trying to protect our own country more than Russia. It doesn't seem political to me. It just seems,
well,
real.
I think that's a question. Truman?
So I have to tell you, I have a bunch of Army buddies, right?
Yeah.
And there are two or three of them that are big Trump fans. When this whole suckers and losers thing came up, I was livid. I mean, livid hardly even covers it. I was beyond livid. And I responded very strongly about that. And my friends, and this looks like it's corroborated. You know, I mean, there's like four or five generals who've said, hey, yeah, that's right. That's what he did. And several of my buddies go, no, he didn't say that. He wouldn't say that. That's not true. I mean, what do you do? You know?
So yeah, it makes me wonder, and I want to hear from you guys, how the message of our democracy is on the ropes is going to play with folks like that who are so deeply in denial of all the different facets of how our democracy is being attacked, the list of which I sent to you guys in my despair yesterday. How do you think the message of our democracy is on the ropes is going to play with
our, the large audience? Our democracy is on the ropes because those darn Democrats are trying to turn us into a socialist country. Come on. That's what's going on.
But let's be realistic about it. I mean, you're talking about 30% of the population who are those true believers. You know, you got 70% who, if they come out and vote, we'll see a blue wave, blue tsunami in your term, Susan. And the key thing is, how do we motivate that 70% to realize? Because the 30%, they're going to believe QA kind of stuff. They're going to believe, you know, Trump never said that, no matter how many generals or how many other officers say that they heard him say it. You know, you got to write that 30% off, because there's always been a lunatic fringe in American politics. And the question is, will the base of Americans come out and vote and vote for continuation of American democracy, or are we going to lose it? That's the real question to me.
Yeah. Kevin? And I tend to agree with certainly Bruce with the sentiment you're voicing there. You know, there's so much about the big lie repeated often enough that it becomes believed. And but Truman, I think that the countervailing force that you have is a personal relationship with some of these folks you're talking about, where you can point out that why aren't any of these generals standing up to support Trump, right? And so you're shaking your head like maybe you don't really have that relationship.
No.
But I think that where we do, right, then we can be maybe more compelling than the repeated lie over and over again. But that all being said, you know, maybe that's not the place to spend your time, right? Maybe it's, as Bruce is saying, you know, let's get the folks who didn't show up in 2016 to show up in 2020.
Yeah, I can tell you that it does not. I mean, I have a very strong personal relationship with these guys. I mean, we served together in Vietnam. We were really tight. We are tight. And
yeah.
It does not matter what I have to say about that. I am an idiot. You know, I don't know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I'm going to be a commie. That's all there is to it.
It's amazing. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I'm done. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it concerns me that so many people get their information from Fox News, which is not news, it's propaganda, and it's the Trump propaganda wing of media. And I think that, you know, if they hear something told them all the time, it's easy to believe that. But I also want to really, really emphasize what y'all are saying about voting turnout and voter suppression. You know, that is one of the biggest concerns that I have about the upcoming election. And there is a wonderful article in the this week, September 7th, New Yorker, by somebody that I didn't, Dexter Filkins, I don't know who he is, but he's written a book called The Uncounted about voter suppression in Florida and Russian hacking in the Florida election system and all of the techniques that are used, poll taxes, you know, ID laws, all kinds of things that have been used to suppress probably primarily the black vote in particular. But I think that those feelings could be resurging now with the, you know, stark contrast between the Black Lives Matter and the administration's choice to call this about law and order and put downing of a revolt instead of realizing these are our people who are not being treated fairly, and that perhaps he as president could do something about that. You know, we're so polarized, it's not even surprising anymore to me.
Well, the whole voter suppression issue, I think, is crucial right now. And I recently read that Georgia, over the last year, I believe, has eliminated over 500,000 voters from their rolls for kind of flimsy excuses. And voter suppression, of course, through the Postal Service is being what shall I say, practiced?
Attempted, for sure.
Yeah, certainly prohibited. And I think we really need to be thinking and working toward getting people registered. And I know lots of folks on Vashon and throughout the country are sending postcards to get people registered and get them out to vote and make it possible. I'm not sure how to counteract those states where they have intimidating poll watchers at the polls, where they make it difficult for people to vote. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think we should have the Human Rights Watch out here in America now, the same people that are sent by the UN to oversee elections in banana republics need to come here. That's what I think, because I think we are so at risk.
I think we have them now.
Do we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Out there?
That's good. You got to remember, this is nothing new. I mean, this has always been an aspect of American politics. Gerrymandering, a term developed in the 1870s as a result of, you know, manipulating electoral boundaries in Massachusetts. Suppression of votes, suppression of minority votes, making difficulty registering to vote, you know, literacy tests, I mean, all that sort of stuff. It's always been a part of the American electoral system.
You know, the other thing that I'm finding as a person who's very media aware is that here we are in the middle of a presidential campaign. I'm not seeing a lot of Biden and Harris, but everything Trump does is covered. He's got his free media campaign going.
And his free venues.
Well, and that's a really important point. I recall, I think it was the fellow who was in charge of CBS during the 2016 campaign, and someone said, "My God, you every time Trump belches, you've got, you know, all this coverage of it." And he said, "Well, yeah, I know, but hey, we're killing him in the ratings." And that's a real hard one to balance out. The ratings mean, you know, that's what they're there for. But on the other hand, I think there needs to be a responsible choice made about how that coverage is taking place.
You know, it kind of reminds me of something I heard about another radio venue, Howard Stern, right? When he took over in, I think it was in New York, they brought him on because he had created such. Sorry, am I not coming through?
I'm going to sign up.
Okay, you know what? Now you are getting, Bruce
Why
is saying.
Why don't we all mute?
Just go ahead. Everybody mute except the person that's talking. And that won't be me, but.
Okay, you know what?
Kevin, you were talking.
Yeah, let's see everybody else mute. And
okay, and had an echo gremlin. All right, so a story, I assume it's true, but maybe not. So Howard Stern working in a small radio, coming up in his version of fame, and they heard about how the great ratings had improved, and so they hired him on in New York, and then they realized this guy was really kind of insulting and didn't really fit the venue of this gigantic New York radio station. But over time, what happened is their ratings started to go up. And the thing that was really compelling to me is they had the stats, right? The guy is saying, and the people who like him, you know, instead of like being on here listening to the radio for 15 to 20 minutes, they're listening for like 45 minutes. Well, what about the people who think he's a real jerk? Yeah, they listen for like an hour and a half. So, it's ratings. It's crazy.
Yeah, welcome to the commercial media of the United States. That is not necessarily working in our best interests either. I sent you guys this quote from Heather Cox Richardson's Labor Day letter from an American, and I would just like to read it because this has been what's on my mind and what sent me into a tailspin yesterday. Quote, earlier this week, New York Times columnist Farhad Manjoo warned that American democracy is ending. Manjoo is an immigrant from apartheid-era South Africa. He pointed to political violence on the streets, the pandemic, unemployment, racial polarization, and natural disasters, all of which are destabilizing the country, and noted that Republicans appear to have abandoned democracy in favor of a cult-like support for Donald Trump. They are wedded to a narrative based on lies as the president dismantles our nonpartisan civil service and replaces it with a gang of cronies loyal only to him. So, you know, that's scary stuff from somebody who escaped a relative dictatorship, who watched it all happen, and who is observing what's happening in our country now. So I repeat, what do we do? Michael?
Well, that's a really good question. I think what Kevin and Indivisible Vashon and folks like that are doing is crucial for that. I think having discussions about it, I think looking at the historical perspective is important, helps us keep despair at bay. And by acting, we help keep it at bay even more. And recognizing that we have to soldier on that way. It's going to be a really interesting time. I was talking a little bit about that with Cynthia and with my kids over the Labor Day weekend, that we have been living through a really kind of a mellow age for quite a long time. 60s cultural revolution notwithstanding, that was quite a bit of turmoil, but the anchors of our republic still felt like they were holding firm. That's what's a little unnerving to me now, is to, like, as the gentleman in the commentary you just read brought up, the wholesale replacement of the crony, you know, with people who are loyal only to Trump, that's very unnerving. But we've just got to turn it around in November.
Kevin?
No, I think it's really, I hear all of those things on that list. And those things, of course, as Bruce will tell us, are happening now, but they've also happened in the past. But I think it's really important to be wary of the pretext. Right. And the pretext, for example, is after the George Floyd death, there's all kinds of protests, and those protests turn violent. There's the notion that outside agitators with an agenda, you know, created the violence, but it allows the pretext of then Trump to stand up and say, we're going to bring in the military, right, and restore law and order in these cities. We just need to realize that even though we're faced right with those perceived threats, we need to think about and be cautious about taking the knee-jerk reaction and calling it out when it suppresses people's rights in this country. And I think there's rife with opportunities, you know, for this pretext to come up. And I think, like Michael, you just said, we just have to, you know, steady on and say, no, we're not going to take that bait, and be vocal about it.
Lynn, you're muted. There you go.
There we go. Sorry. Two buttons have to toggle. I think it's important to remember, though, that I'm going to pass and gather my thought. I just flitted away when I had to unmute. So somebody else talk. And then I will come back to that because it got interrupted. Isn't that tragic?
Well, I will, as an interlude, a brief interlude, I will have to say, Truman, you mentioned that, you know, your army buddies say that you're helping to turn the country into a socialist country. And I just wonder, the people who say that seem to be okay with our president cuddling up to communist dictators. So I just, you know, I think you got to sort of balance this out a little bit.
Well, you know, it just points out once again that these decisions are not made based on rationality.
No.
A lot of folks. It's emotional.
You know, one of the my buddies said, "Well, I just don't want this country to become a socialist country." And I said, "Well, you know, I completely agree." You know, oh, he says, "I don't want my grandkids to grow up in a socialist country." And I said, "I completely agree." And I said, "You know, if you want those kids to have an education, by golly, their parents ought to pay for it. I mean, that's just the way it is." And you know what? That's darn socialized medicine. I think that we need to get rid of that VA program. I mean, he uses VA all the time. Okay. I said, we got to get rid of that before that socialized medicine catches on. We got to defund that right now, you know?
Social security.
Hey, and we really have to support Trump in that, in suppressing that, payroll tax stuff, because I mean, we got to get rid of that social security and Medicare, oh man, we got to cancel that stuff anyway. And I said, but you know, so what I'm saying is, be careful what you wish for, you know?
Yes, right. And do you want your grandchildren to grow up in an authoritarian government?
Yeah, exactly.
That's where we're going.
I wrote him another tome after that, though, that just said, look, you know, I completely get it. I very much am for free enterprise. I don't want to have heavy regulation on business. I mean, there's got to be a balance there. You can't overregulate stuff or it doesn't function. I mean, we're really good in this country at stopping stuff, but we really need to get going on helping people get things done. And, you know, maybe some of the ways is by promoting business. I mean, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a compromise in there somewhere. But we also have to take care of our folks. I mean, there's just all there is to it.
And so my contribution to your question, Susan, would be continued education about civics. Because I think that, you know, we've talked on this program a lot about people feeling like their individual vote won't count and, you know, that demoralizes them, or that they don't know the difference between socialism and social democracy, which is a compromise within capitalism to distribute some of the wealth so that all of the country can benefit. That is not socialism.
Well, one of the things I said was, if you really want to be worried about it, when they start nationalizing the petroleum industry, when they start nationalizing the car production industry, okay, now let's start to get worried, folks. That's where it's at. Well, I mean, that's socialism.
I think America was so creative. We did that the other way around. I personally think the oil and gas industries has co-opted the government, at least right now. And so,
that's what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, it's one of the interesting things if you watch the Florida elections and what the Democratic campaign in Florida is essentially saying to the Cuban voters, who are largely Republican or have been in the past, and to many of the immigrant South American and Central American immigrant populations, is that Trump is what you ran away from to get here. And, you know, and it's having a resonance among those populations because they've lived under dictatorships. They've lived under, you know, people like Trump. And, you know, they're essentially, I think it's a powerful message for immigrant populations who come from dictatorial regimes.
Boy, that's a good one, Lynn.
I was just going to say in the ending moments here that I think that it's really important to stay steady. That it is an anxious, scary time, and people may tend to just want to turn off all these politics and not turn in their ballots because they're sick of it. I would just say steady on. This is the critical time to stay steady and keep hope and keep, you know, to your values and to speak out and have conversations.
What is it, 50 how many days?
Something like that. 55, 56, 57, something like that. Yeah. Kevin.
And I agree, Lynn. You know, we now have a weekly resistance cafe on Vashon, and you can also find that through the indivisiblevashon.org website banner right at the top of the homepage. But we get together on Thursdays from 3 to 5. We write postcards, we make phone calls, we teach you how to do that. These are things that people can do. And so many things on that list, Susan, that you mentioned are really important. There's some of them we can do things about and others that we just have to kind of realize that the system has existed for a long time, as Bruce says. We have to have confidence in that and do what we can And so we're trying to make as many opportunities for people to do that as possible. So yeah, I hope some folks will drop in and join us.
Thanks, Kevin. And I believe that work goes beyond the state of Washington, which is already pretty blue, correct?
Our focus is outside the state of Washington. Yeah, we are focusing on supporting the Senate so that we can have Mitch McConnell. I don't think we'll be able to flip his seat, but I think we can put him out of a job.
Hey, folks, see you next week.
Harbor Lights. Thanks for listening.